Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, and today I've got a special twist for you. Normally, I'm joined by my co-host, Al McDonald, who happens to be my business partner. But this time, I'm thrilled to be joined by a co-host and friend, Christy Jones from Achievers. Christy, thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to be here. Robin, you and I have known each other for what, almost 4 years now, and so excited to be able to co-host with you today and have the opportunity to introduce our guest.
Well, this is why I'm super excited too, because Christy and I have started working together and we've become friends and colleagues along the way. And we were chatting one day about all the good people we know in our network. And she was kind enough to introduce me to Suzanne Knight. And Suzanne, I'm going to go through a little bit of a bio here. Welcome to the show, because wow, you're an accomplished person. So Suzanne is the CEO of Embolden Consulting and a global keynote speaker who helps organizations unlock growth by simplifying complexity, building high-performance teams, and driving strategic transformation. With executive experience at Walmart, Deloitte, and Philip Morris International, Suzanne has led large-scale transformations and now partners with Fortune 500s, high-growth ventures, and global brands to deliver real business results. Her work spans strategy, leadership development, digital transformation, and operational excellence, always with a bias for action and measurable outcomes. At Embolden, Suzanne and her team help leaders get unstuck, move faster, and create lasting impact, whether that means launching new digital capabilities, designing transformation roadmaps, or building cultures that thrive in disruption. Oh my God, we're going to have a good conversation on this. So I appreciate you doing this, Suzanne.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Robin and Christy, for having me. I was so looking forward to this because from our earlier chats, you are both absolute joys. So whether it was on a podcast or over lunch, I was so looking forward to it.
Yes. And Suzanne, let's tell our audience that we go way back, right? Suzanne, you and I have worked at PMI together. And of course, during that time, I've always admired your ability to lead through complexity with clarity. You are one of the most rarest leaders who can simplify that chaos and still bring people along with that heart.
Oh.
Suzanne, you've sat in some of the most senior seats at Walmart, Deloitte, and PMI, and now you're running your own global consulting firm. What perspective did you gain from those corporate roles that has shaped how you advise leaders today?
Such a good question. So the perspective that I've gained from sitting at executive tables for those organizations, as well as over 80 clients around the world, is that we always face complexity. Something will always go wrong, whether it's within the organization or it's something outside. There can be political change, economic change, a competitor making a big move, a new technology coming in place, and plans need to change accordingly. So leaders could be so organized, they could have the best strategic plan, but then something changes. And the most successful leadership teams are the ones who can adapt thoughtfully and keep the waters calm amongst themselves and with their teams as they're navigating that change. And it's something that's pervasive. It's across industries, across countries, that you have massive complexity and constant change. I would say In the past, we used to talk a lot about collaboration and ability to work with others as being that core capability for leaders to possess. I would challenge that now to say it's really about adaptability to change and ability to future-proof organizations and teams so that they have the resilience to thrive through change.
Nice. Thank you.
I want to pick up on something you said, Suzanne, because, you know, we've done, I think we're approaching 270 episodes now, and you're the first person I've ever heard say something always goes wrong. Yeah. Because when you talk to other entrepreneurs and founders and people in the people space, plans are made thinking, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm excited about this idea and let's go do it. And here's what's going to happen. And then everyone panics when something does go wrong, of course.
Yes.
But for leadership who are coming up in their roles or entrepreneurs who are thinking about building companies, talk to me about that mindset of, okay, we have this great idea, but I know something is going to go wrong. Does that help them in the beginning prepare for this is a great idea right now, but we may have to go in another direction? Because again, I haven't heard someone express that in the way that you did.
When things are planned to go right from the start, it can feel like a surprise or a shock when things go wrong. But in my experience working around the world with so many clients, something always goes wrong. And I think that it is the ability to anticipate that whether it's something really small, like not consulting a stakeholder in a tech adoption program, you know, you get busy, you don't realize this is somebody who should have been on the list, and all of a sudden you have a resistor come into play at the time you want to launch. Or whether it's something a lot more critical, you were about to roll out something really exciting, you were about to roll out a $100 million change, and all of a sudden a major competitor launches their $1 billion change the day before your announcement. That can hurt. Whether it's something like, you have a CEO, the CEO is the biggest champion for your change, and all of a sudden, they join a competitor organization and are walked out the door right after you've announced something that shakes up the team. All of those are real. All of those have happened to my clients, and we couldn't have expected any of those things. So this is where any entrepreneur or any corporate leader, any consultant, really anyone, whether it's in your personal life, professional life, or what you're advising a company for, is to say, it's okay if things don't go as planned. And there's no way we can contingency plan for all of the things that could happen. But we can create a process so that we are sharing information quickly. We are able to bring the right people together to adjust when we have to adapt. And we know generally who those people are going to be and what forum will bring them together to figure things out. It could be like the war room model. It could be something that you have a regular sync and you're going to fast track it and bring it up. But to be able to do that without blame, without judgment, to make it as objective as possible, and to give people clarity and stability as soon as possible is the best thing. And then I'll say for the individual, this is on the entrepreneur side. It's so easy to take things going wrong as a message that things are not going to work. I remember when I started my own company, I had left the corporate world in August 2023. I launched my company in October 2023. It took me 2 months to build the website myself, get incorporated, get a bank account, get an accountant, figure out the basics of what I would do. And it was hard to figure that out, to get a laptop of my own and figure out how to set up all of the work tools I would need, like the basics, figuring that stuff out. And then I started trying to find clients. And it took me October, November, December, 3 months to sign my first client. And I remember feeling like I was looking into this void. I didn't know how long it would take. I didn't have any sure things. I had no salary. I had left the corporate world. I was out on my own. And talk about things going wrong and making them a bigger deal. Anytime I had a meeting that I was really expecting would turn into something and it turned into a no. Anytime I did a proposal and didn't win the work. It was so easy to catastrophize and say, this thing didn't work, so none of it is going to work. But the thing is that I wasn't doing that on the positive side. I wasn't saying, this thing worked, so everything's going to work. It was skewed negative. And I say that, like, sometimes, even professionally, when we do this all day, every day, and I have zero stress reaction when things go wrong in corporate world or with clients, it's actually when I have the clearest head and can move forward to advise my clients and choreograph the change and get them back on track. Personally, I was having that stress reaction. So now when I'm talking to any friend, I'm mentoring business owners, I'm saying, it's not that everything will succeed. It's not that everything will fail. It's a data point. It's one piece of information that you can learn from and recalibrate on. And sometimes, frankly, it's just a blip. It's a numbers game. It's not the end of the world. You will get no's. Just like things go wrong in corporate, it's bound to happen. And it doesn't really mean anything. It's just something to adapt to.
Incredible insights there. I'm glad I asked. And I was just thinking, as you were talking about that, even in, it's happened in business, but it's happened personally as well. Sometimes when things go wrong and you look back years later, you're kind of glad they went that way.
Yeah.
Because it led you to where you are. I want to take a bit of a pivot and I want to ask you about disruption, because you spent a lot of time helping companies prepare for disruption.
Yes.
What are you seeing out there, Suzanne? Like, what do you think leaders today are still, they're not seeing clearly about this next wave of change that we're living through right now?
So, Robin, this is a very important point, because companies are operating in ways that are new in terms of the pace of change and how they have to adapt. But I don't know if there's as much focus on those horizons coming out around what will continue to change going forward. So to break it down, I'm seeing companies get better at taking the current term and saying we have to do something different. This is where you see a lot of layoffs coming from. Companies are saying we have cost pressures that we haven't had in a long time. Economy, we don't know where things are going. Tariffs are unpredictable. Risk is high. We know that there is technology that can automate out a lot of the roles we have today. And we're going to hedge our bets and lay people off. I'm seeing so much of that across industries. And it's daily that I'm getting messages on LinkedIn, whether from my network or outside, of people saying, I just want to talk and hear your thoughts on what I as an individual should do to get back on track. Now, the part that I don't know if individuals or companies are planning for as actively is where we're going to go in terms of consistent implementation of new technology. I've worked with clients where we were able to cut 60% of the workforce using technology, new ways of working in org design, and chose not to because of what the company was concerned would happen in terms of public perception and loss of goodwill. But if you actually look at what's happening in the market, companies are being rewarded for cutting heads, substantial improvements to share price. So the thing is that I expect this will continue, but what does that mean for organizations in terms of planning? I've said for a long time that I don't think layoffs are necessary. This is contentious, actually, because so many companies go to layoffs. My perspective is that if organizations actually look at what's happening, they follow the plans and trends, it is possible through attrition, through building new business lines that will actually keep you in new service offerings or product lines or parts of the market, to cross-train people and move them into those new areas rather than hire from outside. It's possible to train people ahead. So if you know you lose 10% of your workforce per year through retirements and exits, that you're training up enough that you can not hire from outside and keep shrinking your workforce by 10% a year. But you have to be diligent on that development and cross-training and investing in your people, because otherwise you'll have the wrong skill sets compared to the roles you actually need. But if you're successful at looking ahead 2-3 years out to what skills you'll need, you shouldn't have to do those mass layoffs, more like small recalibrations, getting your one ringer who's amazing at digital marketing and can supplement skills that you have today, but the person who can actually be the guide to bring everybody else up to the next level. It's expensive to exit people, to lay them off. And I also say for individuals, as we follow these trends and processes, don't expect that you will be in one organization for your career don't expect that you're going to be in one organization for 5 or 10 years. You might be in that company for 2 years. As we move to the point that companies are changing so substantially, and well, I gave you my layoff philosophy, I'm like the only one. I don't see companies following my guidance on this. They do their own thing, and it's not what I said. It actually is to go through layoff cycles every couple years, cut 20% of the workforce, figure out what you need, where your gaps are after laying people off, and then rehire specific skill sets to fill your gaps. But they're not listening to me and avoiding layoffs proactively. So as an individual, the best investment you can make is in future-proofing your own skills and building a life where you're less dependable on a steady salary. Be ready for the peaks and valleys. Figure out whether it's a portfolio career where if some things are not going well, others might be. And continue to build your network, your relationships, your personal brand, so that if you have to find a new job every 18 months or 2 years, or a new contract, that you will be desirable. And find your side hustle, the thing you can own that nobody can take away. It might be something with a physical product. It might be a service, but don't put all your eggs in that corporate basket that it will work forever, because certainly the trends are suggesting that that's not the way things will happen anymore.
Suzanne, that's some really good advice, right?
I totally get it now, Christy. I got to tell the audience, when Christy and I said, hey, this would be fun to co-host together, and Christy said, oh my God, you have to meet Suzanne. Okay, I totally get it. Yep, this is why.
Thank you.
This is great. Sorry to interrupt you there, Christy.
Yeah, no, Suzanne, so you have all of these great ideas for the individual and what they should do to protect themselves through all this change. Yes. But what about those companies that are administering this change? How do they hold on to the culture that they have or the culture that they desire as this rapid change goes through their organization? What would you say are some of those practical steps that leaders can take to ensure that their teams are not only surviving the disruption, but they're actually thriving in it?
So what should companies do to maintain their culture, to thrive rather than survive? I think companies are trying to grasp onto what they can. And right now, one of those pieces seems to be return to office, that companies are bringing people back at bigger and bigger proportions and speed and sense of urgency and tracking and badge swipes and walking the halls and judging commitment based on who's physically there. And I believe that part of it is to check the box on corporate spaces being used. I get that. But then part of it is to say people equals culture. And I think that that's where it's so dependent on the organization and the team and the type of work with what is going to resonate that will help them thrive or survive or actually disengage the workforce. And strategically, I know a number of companies are going through this process because layoffs are expensive. So bringing people back who don't want to be back is one way to have natural attrition. So I would say that's one area, again, very contentious, but that companies should really think about in terms of what the intention is here. Is the intention to create attrition, in which case this is a good way to do it? Is this a way that people can work together, whiteboard together, be in the same physical space, collaborate in new ways, meet up at the coffee area and chat? This also could be good ways, but really strategically, it's not just about putting people together, but putting the supports and infrastructure and making it worth their while to come back so that you make it a positive physical experience so that people are having time and space to think and collaborate. Leaders are doing Ask Me Anything sessions or walking the halls and making themselves accessible for people, because leaders can be your culture drivers, but only if people see them and can interact with them. If they're in a corner office and people aren't getting the chance to work with them, you're losing the opportunity to drive culture through your leadership team. I think it's also about making it worth people's while in terms of how people work. Leaders should be creating opportunities for collaboration to say, we are going to meet up and think together and work together and solve these three problems that would be harder to do if we were in physically different spaces, and actually put people in that same boardroom with whiteboard markers and say, we are benefiting from your thought leadership and that immediate collaboration, looking in each other's eyes, seeing our gestures, looking on one physical whiteboard to say we are thinking together and getting to better results. Like, prove that it's valuable for people to be together. That's one of the points I would say. Another one is I hear a lot about performance culture. Performance culture can be very different than what a lot of companies can have, because a number of companies have collaboration cultures or collegiality being the focus, and now we're going to performance. But I actually think you can have both. It again goes back to your ways of thinking and ways of working as a company. So think about sync ups and quick decision making. What can actually stop companies from performing is having to wait for decisions. So if you create cadences where people have access to their leaders, leaders and teams have a certain level of empowerment and autonomy to move work forward, you can create a performance culture without losing that collaboration and collegiality. Performance culture isn't just about how you measure performance or the stick or the carrot and how you get people moving to outcomes. It can be as simple as saying, we will have people make decisions faster and give you clarity on what your next steps will be. Or about prioritizing. Instead of having 60 priorities, we are going to have 5 priorities, and everyone will be clear on those 5 things we want to hit, and we will know where our dependencies are and how to work together to hit those 5 things. So we feel like a team, like we're one team working toward one set of clear goals. And you can still have massive performance without losing the essence of collaboration.
I think I'm pausing to take notes, Suzanne. Even to this day, you continue to educate me and continue to have my mind turning with new ideas to perhaps bring into my own teams and colleagues at Achievers. So as you talk about these ideas and really what are some of those things to focus on, it often feels overwhelming for leaders. They are drowning in the complexity of really where do they start on these initiatives and how do they get to a good place? So what would you say is the first place that they should start? Where do they start to dig in when they're really drowning in these complexities?
Leaders have so much on their plates. Like, Christy, I think about you and your executive colleagues at Achievers and every other organization. There is so much to do. Any organization right now is managing business as usual work, typically some level of strategy or transformation that's bigger picture, longer term. And then you're dealing with changes as they happen, which, as I said, they can be positive changes or issues, crises, things like having your best performer leave. They could be things like having a new technology come into play that you need to figure out fast because you know your competitors are looking at it. And so it's kind of like 3 levels of things that leaders need to be doing at any given time. And they need to lead the change, but as humans, they need to navigate the change concurrently with figuring out how to lead it. It is a massive piece of work. I do this keynote and workshop called Never Waste a Good Crisis. And that's the whole theme. It's to say, how can you take something that feels difficult in the moment and actually find the opportunity or the good in it? So if things are going wrong, go back to the root, go back to the essence of the work you do, and figure out how to break it down and make it more efficient, better for customers, better for the team. Like, you don't have to put the Band-Aid and fix the most broken things in the moment. You can actually go to the root and rebuild and make things so much better and stronger from the start. So how do you start doing that? I think it goes back to prioritizing, because any leader I speak with or any team today would typically say that they have so many things on the go that it's hard to actually list the priorities. Everything feels like a priority, which means that nothing is actually a priority. And so this is where, if organizations are most disciplined with this, they can go back to the start of saying, what is it we actually need to get done What will those few items be that have the greatest impact on our success at the end of the year? Or those few things that will future-proof us, our business, our teams, our company, our financials, because those are the things that we should focus on, not the nice-to-haves until the must-haves have been solved. And if leaders take that approach, you have certain things that in business as usual must happen for the company to operate. Think about in retail. If you don't have goods on shelves, if you don't have items available for purchase online, you don't have retail. And then you have the nice to haves, which you can do only once you've done the critical pieces. So think about, I'm going to be contentious, let's say clean stores. You want clean stores, but you need items to sell in your stores. There is actually a difference in priority, even though we would often say that they're both very important. Think about in public transportation. We need buses and trains to come on time, but more important is we need people to be safe riding that bus or train. There's again a difference in level of importance. You could do that analysis across every piece of work that every leader is delivering and break it down into the must-haves, the nice-to-haves, and then almost like the backlog of things that you would get to if you completed the other items on the list, and have people start less but finish more. So start something, finish that thing, and then move to the next one. That is the best way because you reduce context switching. You eliminate the number of meetings that come from having so many items in process. Like think about every initiative you're doing. There would be a whole set of meetings that the team would have to do to get that initiative done. If people are working on 10 things, that's 10 sets of meetings versus one thing that they get it done, they immediately start realizing the value from that one thing. So it really comes back to if companies and leaders want to make work faster, smarter, easier, better, and more impactful, focus on the priorities, start less, and finish more.
Sounds so easy, right?
But to your point, I know it's easier said than done because everything feels so important. And so that's the thing that if I'm sitting at a leadership table with a group, I'm asking them the really hard questions as somebody on the outside saying, I know this is something that would help customers immensely. But if we don't do this other thing, will we have a thriving business financially in a year? Maybe, maybe not. And so that's where we can have the mix where any organization with people, with a certain number of people, can do multiple things. I'm not saying you have to, as a whole company, only do one thing, but it's almost like you have the pieces of the puzzle that have to come together. And you have to do one puzzle at a time. You can't do multiple puzzles because think about all the pieces mix up. You don't know if this is unicorn puzzle or bird puzzle. Like all of a sudden, you have to sort out pieces when you've added two puzzles together. So one puzzle has multiple pieces. You can do multiple things within that one set of priorities, but you finish those first. And only then move to the next set.
Suzanne, can I just jump in there? Because I'm still thinking you started out the conversation this way.
Please.
And I just want to go back to it because it's a phrase, again, I just latched onto.
Yes.
Leaders should never waste a good crisis.
Yes.
Can you, in your experience, can you talk about any, you know, have you seen any great opportunities come out of those crises that you've worked on?
Yes. So I'll say from before my time, but you can think of Apple from the 1990s losing market share and Steve Jobs actually recalibrating around customer and customer experience and moving into a whole series of products that have led us to where we are today, where Apple has domination of the smartphone, smartwatch, wearable tech markets. You can say the same thing for my clients now, where actually taking something that's not going well, like a business strategy that relies on a certain product or service line and saying, this is now diluted. We have so many companies competing with us in these spaces. We need to figure out our niche. The niche might be something like partnerships. The niche could be something like, on our own, we cannot build an ecosystem with each of our own verticals that will compete with a competitor. We tried, but we don't have the money, we don't have the time, and they are moving too fast with too much funding. So we are going to build partnerships that will fast track the process and give us new ways to compete. That is absolutely something that I see companies that I advise doing. Or to say, like that example I gave around, we are announcing a $100 million transformation, but our big competitors just launched multi-billion dollar transformations. How can we compete? How can we position ourselves in the market? It can't be based on what we thought it would be, which was the size of our investment in transformation. Now it actually has to be on how we're going to leverage our size and scale to be agile, adaptable, to compete in new ways, to go back to being the little guy connected into communities, to be that Canadian option rather than the hyperscalers coming from abroad. It's a different positioning. And I think that that's where the crisis could be massive, because if we compete apples to apples, we will lose. But if we go back to our roots and say that there are unique elements that we have that they don't have, and we are going to lean into those elements, then we can compete in very different ways.
I'm going to be thinking about next time I have a crisis, because things will go wrong, right, Suzanne?
Yes, mm-hmm. They will.
So next time I'm going to replay this podcast and I'm just going to listen to Suzanne and say, there's opportunity here, right?
There is. It can be very calming. Honestly, I think that this is where it goes to say, when you expect things to be great and they're not, it's like you've created a deficit that now you have to rebuild from. But if you expect that you're going to have peaks and valleys of performance and how difficult or easy things are going to be, and you just plan for it, and in the times of strength, you're also investing in future proofing. And when things are hard, you've already shored yourself up with the skills or ability to be able to take your way back to that status quo. You're better off. And this is where I'll say there actually is a interplay with wellness. And this is where I talk a lot too with teams about how you can't treat a marathon like it's a sprint. Mm-hmm. You can't, because any of us could run 100 meters today. We'd be different speeds, but we could get through 100 meters. But we can't get through a marathon today unless we've been training. We'll be really hard. We'll probably get injured. Like if we're not training for the marathon and we try to run it like we're running a sprint, most of us won't make it. And the ones that do will be in a whole lot of pain. And so I say this on the corporate side too, that you have to work as though you have 40 hours of capacity a week. Don't plan to take on so many priorities or run your team like you have 60 hours available from them, because they will burn out. You will not get the work done. And ultimately, people are just going to leave. Like, they don't want to work 60 hours a week is the status quo when you as a leader are entitled to 40 hours of their time. And the thing is that sometimes there might be a hard push. There might be one week where people are working 60 hours. That's the sprint. But you can't treat it as though every week is going to be like that, or people aren't going to make it through to the end and your program will not get delivered. So this is where, don't give up on the gym time. Don't give up on sleep. Eat all your meals. Have your healthy snacks. Like, do all the wellness things to future-proof yourself and make sure you are prepared for when something is maybe needing a little bit extra time, or something bad happens and you have a night where you don't sleep as well. Way better to have that happen when you've already caught up on sleep and don't have a deficit than if you're running on empty, because then a crisis happens and it's much harder to shore yourself up to get out of it.
It's a much needed reminders of wellness and self-care.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. And they apply to corporate and founders. Like, we often don't have people telling us to take care of ourselves. We're often the ones who lose the plot the fastest, because whether it's us taking care of our kids or our aging parents or getting into a routine or going through our commute, we often put ourselves last, but it always catches up to us. So that's the reminder that who will take care of us if not us? Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited about this episode for a number of reasons. Number one, we've already talked about it. We're going to go have lunch. Maybe not today, but we're planning lunch because there's so much to talk about here. We're going to have future conversations. But I get to ask the signature question today because usually that is Al's signature question. So I'm super excited. So if you're up for it, Suzanne, I'd love to run it by you.
Please.
All right. Well, there's a saying that says societies grow great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. Suzanne, what proverbial trees are you planting through your work at Embolden and the leaders you're shaping for the future?
This is an amazing signature question. The trees that I'm planting are around future-proofing individuals and future-proofing individual leaders to be able to lead industries, not just companies, but industries in ways that are sustainable and that recognize that we are going to have new technology, we are going to have new processes and ways of working. But at the same time, what's the point of doing any of that if we're not respecting the people? We're here living on Earth. We have a finite time and we have people who are instrumental parts of society, community, organizations, the fabric of work, the fabric of life. We need to lead in ways that are respectful of that. And so I take a large picture when I'm working with companies or individuals to say, always future-proof, never forget about yourself, never forget about wellness. Things are going to be hard, but keep focusing on what matters, whether it's your corporate priorities, whether it's your own priorities, just keep future-proofing.
That is a great answer. And I think that's a great theme of what we've been chatting about here today. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of this. Christy Jones, last word. I have to thank you. We're definitely doing lunch for this intro. So any last words before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, Suzanne, acknowledge you for sharing your story today. I have seen your impact firsthand, and I know that our listeners will walk away with some real actionable insights. And for anyone listening who's navigating change, whether it's performance, culture, or leadership, there are clues here for all of us. And if you're curious about Achievers and how we're helping global teams thrive through recognition, transparency, and performance, feel free to reach out and connect with me on LinkedIn.
You know, it's funny, Christy, anytime I'm chatting with someone and they say, oh, our organization works with Achievers. And then they just, the big smile comes over their face, right? So there's something going on in Achievers that they're doing right. And I keep seeing those purple jackets and giving you the hints. Maybe I'll get one of these days. Suzanne, for anyone who's interested in more about chatting with you or the work that you're doing, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Thanks, Robin. And thanks, Christy. First, I'll say I've loved our conversation. This was an absolute joy. And for anyone wanting to get in touch with me, please connect with me on LinkedIn, Suzanne Knight, or my website, suzannekknight.com. I look forward to getting in touch.
All right. Awesome. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Christy and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Christy or myself, please feel free to give us a call or be joining the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.